Hey, it's Threesome Podcast number 19. It's Lex and Stacey. What is happening, Stace?
Hey, Lex. How are you?
I am good. I'm incensed. I got something on Facebook that pissed me off.
Oh.
And I've saved it for us to talk about because it's indigenous to your area.
Okay.
Detroit, Michigan, to be exact.
Aw, Detroit.
And a town you know very much about. And so we will discuss that to start things off. But we also have great practical jokes to discuss.
Yes.
Tasteless great practical jokes. Yeah. Which we'll get into. So let's go ahead and get started. So this thing rolls across my Facebook from some right-wing person. I get this shit all the time.
I'm sorry.
And it says, fact, in 1960, Detroit had the highest per capita income in the nation. Fact, Republican mayors oversaw Detroit from 1933 to 1962. Fact, since 1962, Democratic mayors have run Detroit. These are the facts of Detroit today. 47% of Detroit residents are functionally illiterate. Less than half of its residents over age 16 are employed. 60% of all children in Detroit live in poverty. 40%
That's all true.
40% of the streetlights do not work. Only a third of the ambulances run. Two-thirds of the parks have been permanently closed since 2008. Less than 10% of the crimes committed in Detroit are solved. So I looked at this, and I went, okay, how am I going to respond to this?
I know how I would have responded.
So I'll read you what I wrote. I went, yeah. And I guess the same results would have taken place had not the big three automakers taken a quarter million jobs and moved them off to other countries and out of the town. Excuse me, that has nothing to do with politics whatsoever. A Democratic or Republican mayor had no control over the big three automakers and their dispute with the labor union, and they ended up getting fucked by it. Live with it.
But if you do want to go a little deeper with that, it is the Republican way to, you know, hey, capitalism, all hail capitalism. So, you know, yeah, when you Republicans support a company, a corporation doing what they can to cut that bottom line so they can make more profit. So that's why we saw, like, starting in the 70s and 80s, you know, all corporations, not just the big three, but unfortunately the big three affected Detroit the worst. But, you know, you saw everything leaving the country. Manufacturing jobs are what built this country. Starting in the 40s after World War II, and Republicans supporting corporations took all those jobs away from Americans.
Yes, but in that particular area, you know what the concentration of jobs was.
Yes, it was manufacturing.
And there's nothing like it in the rest of the United States. You know, everybody needs a car, everybody has a car, and they were all in America being made there. I'm probably lowballing it when I say 250,000 jobs, probably much more.
Look, my grandparents worked in the, you know, my grandmother worked for Chrysler. My grandfather retired from Chrysler. My grandfather actually personally knew Henry Ford. Mm-hmm. Not kidding. You know,
yeah.
The auto industry runs in my family. And I can tell you, being here in Michigan, it was never even considered. We were taught you do not buy foreign cars. You support what's built right here.
Right.
And so when I moved to Florida, I was shocked. I will tell you, it was noticeable, like all of the foreign cars that people buy down there, that, you know, you do see them up here, and it actually is not as, there's more of them than there were 20 years ago, for instance.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was what you were taught as a Michigan kid. You do not buy anything except domestic cars.
And the current head of GM, I forget his name, he's kind of a progressive guy for as old as he is. He's the guy that kind of spearheaded the Volt and
which my mom has one,
was extremely fascinated with what Tesla was doing and felt the company should go somewhat in that direction. I forget his name, but he basically said we had our head up our ass because we all sat here in Detroit and watched everybody drive our cars and really thought that's what happened in the rest of America when we even knew statistically it wasn't.
Right.
We knew we were getting our ass handed to us by foreign car makers, but when we drove to work every day, we saw mostly our cars. So that's was hard to overcome inside the boardroom.
Right.
And they did what they had to do to survive as a company. I get that. You know, and they pretty much knew they were destroying Flint and Detroit when they did it. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the Roger and Me documentary that Michael Moore
did. I have a
did.
Cousin who was in that movie.
But it is, yeah, does he dramatize it with his megaphone and standing outside of 3M headquarters and all that? Yes, that's Michael Moore's way. But if you peel the layers of the onion away, you know, what he's basically said was completely factual, that, you know, these companies, you know, for their own profitable good, moved these jobs to other countries where much cheaper labor was. He made it sound like it was a diabolical thing, but it truth of the matter is, it was, they were getting suffocated on two ends. Better foreign car manufacturing by the likes of Toyota, Nissan, and of course the always there, you know, Mercedes, BMWs, everything else. And on the other side, auto workers who didn't understand the plight that they had very formidable and new competitors that were making it tough for them to get paid more money than they already were.
Right.
So I have to sympathize, now that I have my own business to a degree, of what GM, Chrysler, and Ford were going through. I think what they did was extreme, to say the least, but I truly believe they couldn't have survived had they not done it. And that's kind of the sad part of it. Now, from what I understand, some of those relationships and jobs and stuff like that are being brought back to the U.S., but the pay structure and the strength of the labor union and auto workers and all that isn't, you know, even there anymore.
Well, this is what I don't understand. And this is actually not a gripe. It is something that I'm trying to figure out. Okay, yes. The jobs all left because cheaper labor. Now they are starting to come back. And this isn't even just with the auto industry, but jobs in general. You will hear people say, well, all the new jobs that are being created right now are all minimum wage jobs. That is true, or, you know, a good portion of them. I mean, the pay that Americans are getting today is so much less than it was even 10 years ago. But nobody's willing to pay people more.
No.
You know, the unions are, you know, considered the devil now, you know, because people don't want anyone unionized, because those fast food workers, for instance, and Walmart employees should all be kept at their really, really low pay rate so that everyone else can afford cheap stuff. So where does the change come from? How do we fix this? I don't see how it gets fixed, because there's no way for higher paid jobs to be created when companies aren't willing to lessen their profit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I it's something that I can't, I have no idea like how to fix or what to say, because it's like, yeah, we aren't making the money that we once were. A great country is making so much less than what they once were.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get those good jobs anymore. They're not there. And even if it is quote unquote a good job, it is still paying so much less than it was 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah. And even if they had not moved in the 80s, it would have caught up to them sooner or later. With the housing bubble and stuff like that in 2008, if the current structure would have been in place that was in place in the 80s, we would have had all of our automakers go under.
Right.
Without question.
No, I recognize that, and I think most people recognize that. I don't think that it was, but, you know, they had to do it because other countries can offer this cheap labor, but we are kind of seeing that now with our labor becoming cheaper because the pay isn't there, and it's not going to get better. If we want to compete, you know, basically I'm hoping that, you know, our children aren't working in sweatshops for 30 cents a day,
right.
You know, but that's what it is in other countries.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know, you know, and when you look at, again, like Black Friday and stuff, that people are willing to, you know, kill themselves and get up at 4 a.m. to get that TV for $100 off.
Yeah.
It's very hard to convince people to buy American.
Yeah.
You want your shit cheap.
Yeah, you do.
And that's not going to change. And unfortunately, we can't provide cheap shit.
No, I mean, there's some companies bringing their manufacturing back to the United States, and they're admitting that theirs is going to cost a little more than if it were made overseas. But some people are willing to pay the price to have it made here for some reason.
And I hope so. You know, and that, I guess, is the thing. If you want to talk about Americans getting better jobs and being paid more, ultimately you have to make it competitive for people to manufacture here. But if you're not willing to pay that extra money to get something that was made in America because you've got to get your cheap made in China plastic shit, then you are part of the problem, I guess.
But, you know, things have changed. Daddy's not going off to work anymore and mommy's staying home, you right. know. And companies now are doing very innovative things by giving you modular-type work assignments, meaning you have a 24-hour day. You spend it how you want, but this is the shit I need done by 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Unfortunately, that's not happening a lot. You're lucky. And those are usually tech,
yeah.
you know, startups and stuff that's happening for the millennials.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a 45-year-old man, you probably are not getting that job.
I don't know. My sister's 60 and just got that job.
Well, good. Good for her, honestly.
You know, but then again, her credentials are ridiculous. So that's probably why she got the job. But the fact of the matter is that if you're willing to construct your business in a way that maybe doesn't give people money, but gives them other things, maybe even it gives them a chance to make money doing another job, or maybe it gives them a chance to save money by going to work at a certain time of day as opposed to another. There's a lot of places that can run on this type of mentality. It really can.
I agree.
And, you know, it's something that, you know, really we should start conditioning our society on, not only from an employer standpoint, but also from a opening standpoint. Like if you're a Best Buy, offer sales from midnight to 7 a.m. You know, that's like, we're selling this TV for this price, you know, in the middle of the night or whatever the case is. And you have people work 24/7 because we're in a 24/7 society now. You know, some people work completely backwards hours from others. Because everything is open 24/7 anymore. Fast food restaurants are. Grocery stores are. Hell, even, you know, Walgreens and CVS's, some of them are open 24 hours.
Right.
Restaurants open 24 hours. IHOP. Denny's. You know, stuff like that. You know, there's... If I had a retail chain, I would be providing my customers overnight incentives to come buy stuff at that time of night.
See, my incentive is, for instance, the local Walmart going in overnight, because that's when you don't have to deal with people.
Right.
That's my incentive to go to Walmart in the middle of the night.
But, you know, how cool is it that, you know, they have a, you know, a computer on sale, you know, from midnight to 7 a.m. for 25 or 50% off, you know, if you buy $100 worth of groceries or whatever the case is.
Right.
You know, just package deals like that. I just, you know, there's so much innovative things companies can do to accommodate employees. There's so many employees where, you know, there's somebody working through the day at the house and a night job would be perfect.
Yeah. And if you are someone who can maintain, you know, productivity, you know, working from home, if can be good, you know, if you're a lazy fuck who's going to go watch TV, probably working from home isn't your thing. But, you know, there are those who can get their shit done, and they can get it done in half the time than if they were sitting in their office in a cubicle having to deal with other shit.
Yeah, but here's the thing now. You know, you can set up things on computers now, assignments and things like that, because, you know, online school does it. You know, you here's the amount of time you have to get this done. Say, like, you got an employee working at home. It's like your availability to get in the system and start working is 3 o'clock this afternoon. Your ability to get it done ends at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Right.
Well, most people are going to sit down at 3 o'clock and knock it out.
You know, the technology is there, definitely. Getting employers and bosses to get on board with that is the difficult part.
You got some people that'll eat dinner and then sit down and work till 11 o'clock at night on it. And then you have your other people that'll get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and finish it before 9 a.m.
I am a much better person doing shit in the middle of the night.
I am too. I would easily wake up at 3 a.m. and start rocking and rolling on something like that.
I would just stay up, you know, and go to bed in the morning. That's why overnights were always so suited for me.
No, because I fall asleep automatically like 8 or 9 at night, but I never sleep all the way through the night.
Right.
So, you know, I would just wake up at my usual 2:30 or 3 and just start kicking ass. You know, and you know, that makes a happy work environment for people. Happiness breeds productivity.
Little things, like if you have kids and you've got up like Lex did at 3 in the morning and got a shit ton of work done, and guess what? It's 6 a.m. now, and you can go actually make a real breakfast for your kids before they go to school.
You can take them to school.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. You know, you can then feel like, you know, you're a better parent. And not that people who don't do that are bad parents. But, you know, for your own peace of mind, you're like, look, they got a good breakfast. And I'm taking them to school. I'm doing this. I'm being a real parent here.
But Richard Branson's doing this at all of his companies, and it's kicking ass.
I kind of love him.
Yeah. You know, and it's basically, you know, it's longer periods of time. You know, it's like months work worth of work, you know, that they give their employees. It's like in the next 30 days, this is your objective. You know, if you want to work 7 straight days, 24 hours a day to finish this, go right ahead. You know, if you want to do it like a normal work day for 30 days, go right ahead. If you want to do something in between that, go right ahead. But at the end of 30 days, your shit better be done.
Right.
It's all on you. And if people...
And maybe that's how you get paid. You know?
That is how they get paid.
Cool.
That's exactly how they get paid.
Instead of like clocking in, you're clocking in with your finished projects.
Yes. That's exactly how they get paid. And the productivity in the company, according to him, has gone up exponentially.
Well, you realize over like in France, I think it was France, maybe Germany, just recently I saw where they have passed a law where it is basically illegal for you to check your work email after 5 or 6 o'clock at night until the next morning. They're that strict about making sure that workers are not being overworked and not being abused because they're doing stuff off the clock from home.
Right.
Americans might be fat and lazy, but you know what? We work harder than anyone else.
Yeah, but we work harder than everybody else out of fear. It trickles down from the boardroom to the superiors to the employees. There's always some piece of shit somewhere in the chain that's so afraid for his job that he's tyrannical with his employees and puts the fear of God into them, who turn around and put the fear of God into their staffs and so on and so forth. Yep. And until that culture changes, it's always going to be the case.
Right. And we've all worked for that person.
Oh, yeah. I've worked for almost nothing but that person. Maybe not directly, but I know he's somewhere within 2 or 3 promotions away.
Right.
And I watch him scare my boss, or watch him scare the person above my boss, who in turn scares my boss, who in turn tries to scare us.
Right.
And it works. Because nobody wants to be without money or lose their jobs. But our productivity in this country is spread thin. Because there is no siesta time. There's nothing to look forward to. And to me, after a while, that breeds non-productivity.
And zombies and bad morale in general.
Well, it also breeds bad workmanship and bad products.
Well, you get to a point where you're just coasting. It's like, okay, I know what I have to do to get done, and I'm just going to sit here in my cubicle or my desk or whatever and just pray for 5 o'clock to get here.
Yeah, and you shouldn't think like that.
No.
You know, I mean, how cool is it in Italy that nobody does shit for 2 hours a day? Literally. I mean, it's like the stores close, the place completely just shuts down for people to chill. They go home and spend time with their families or their friends or whatever the case is. Have a glass of Chianti and
yeah.
And at the end of 2 hours they go back and work for 3 or 4 more hours. Doesn't seem like there are any productivity issues over there.
No.
It's pretty fucking chilled out, as a matter of fact. And it's pretty much mandatory. I just don't understand how it's ever going to get better in the United States. And I don't want to hear anything about your right-wing or left-wing politics, people, because that has nothing to do with it. This is a case-by-case, company-by-company referendum. This is how companies can choose to do business differently. They can change their own culture. And Stacy is right. There are a lot of tech industries that are going outside the box to take care of their employees. At Edmunds.com, where my sister works, it's, you know, yoga classes and CrossFit classes and gyms and media rooms to go chill out in, you know, for part of the day. They also have the modular work assignments where they do it on their own time. They're given budgets, you know, for their travel. The salespeople are, and they're allowed to manage them themselves, meaning they can find cheaper flights and they can find cheaper ways to get where they're going to get. And at the end of the year, you know what they get to do? keep what's left over.
Keep that money they saved.
Yeah.
Good for them.
You know, I mean, it's just, you know, and the company knows right away, this is the budget for this, and it's not going to go over or under. This is just what it is. And it's up to the resourcefulness of the person that's going all over the place to book their travel wisely, to set up their appointments with their customers in succession wisely, to maximize every bit of money they're given to spend. It's genius.
It is. It's just, again, getting people used to it.
Yeah. You want a bonus? Don't waste the company's money by flying first class and, you know, staying at the Ritz-Carlton. You know, I mean, you can if you want to. You're not going to get a bonus at the end of the year.
Right.
But, you know, my sister knows a guy that got a $30,000 bonus.
Because he's cheap.
Because he stayed in, you know, travel lodges and you know, was very wise about his transportation.
Right.
You know, he'd fly to one destination and then rent a car and set up meetings at morning, afternoon, at night in town, three towns apart, and just drive in a $19 a day rental car.
Right.
At the end of the
year. No, it's just getting people used to that, though. Thinking that way. Thinking outside the box.
Yep. And that's pretty much the case. I applaud it. And you can,
you know, and this can't obviously go with everyone. If you own like a little shop somewhere and on, you know, some street somewhere, and you're selling TVs or whatever, you know, you obviously will have to have that employee who's there 9 to 5 or
right.
Whenever you open, whenever you close. But for companies who have people that don't need to do that, there's so many ways to make employees' lives easier and make them thus happier.
Even if the pressure is on them to sell, you are putting their fate in their own hands by handling their own travel, their own schedules, and everything else. You are empowering them, and that makes them happy. You don't have some Kevin Spacey.
They're not being micromanaged.
Yeah, there's not kind of some Kevin Spacey looking dude coming in going, here's your tickets, this is where you're going, and you'll like it. You know? It's already a done deal. You already know who your clients are, who you got to go see, and you can sit there and space out your year, book your travel, do everything you can possibly do to save your budget, and at the end of the year, you keep the money.
It would make sense.
You know, she didn't cut any corners, and hers were still five figures. You know, it's a nice bonus. And the company gets the write-off for it.
Nice.
You know, so...
Always looking at the tax.
Yeah. Well, they have to.
I know.
Yeah. So it's just, there's so many clever ways to do things that are really not that clever. They're just practical. Makes sense. It's putting trust in people that you hire. I mean, you're hiring them. You must think something of them. You probably should be prepared to give them responsibility and feel good about it, because if you don't, you hired the wrong person.
Right. But unfortunately, you do get now, you know, again, those places where it's like, well, we just have to fill this position because we need someone and everyone sucks, so we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And we know those companies and those people, you know, where it's like, I have no faith in this person, but he's a warm body and he's better than nothing.
Yeah, well, that's sad.
It is.
Because there's a lot of people out there that are much better than that, they could have that job, and it's hard for them to get. It's just a bad climate, you know. But But there's some companies, just as we just spoke about, just doing some really cool stuff. You know, Richard Branson is just, he's the real deal. It's no surprise to me at all why he's filthy rich.
And seems to be fairly decent about it.
He is decent about it.
He doesn't make, you know, any excuses for his wealth.
No.
And I don't think that he should, because he certainly seems to have earned it. You know what I mean? As opposed to Paris Hiltoning it.
Yeah. But when he does something, he does it right. You know, if you ever fly on Virgin Airways, you're going to crap yourself compared to other planes you've been on.
Do they not have bathrooms?
And the price, yes, they have bathrooms. Right in the seats. It's amazing.
Yay!
So you'll be very amazed on how luxurious the accommodations are for basically the same price.
Cool.
I was like, God, I'd fly this airline everywhere if I could. But they don't go everywhere yet.
But they're working on it.
Yeah, they are. And they're going to be extremely successful. They really are. I have no doubt in my mind in 10 years they'll be the leading cell phone carrier too. I just think the guy can do no wrong. So, there you go.
So anyway, you nominate him for Alex and Stacey threesome.
No, I don't want to have sex with him.
Oh, you do, kind of.
Yeah, but I'll watch you two do it. That's kind of cool.
You want a canoodle. Yeah.
It'd be fun to watch you do a rich man. Do what Richard says, Stacey. Just shut up.
Yes, sir.
Do what he says.
Yes, sir.
So,
what would you like, sir?
Yeah, I'll just bark orders in the corner. It's what I'm...
Because that's sexy.
Well, it's just what I'm best at anyway. So, speaking of being good at things, this may be an argument or a discussion, but I understand you have a practical joke that, you know, some people may think is genius and others tasteless.
Well, first of all, I did not do it. But
yes,
this guy who is a professional prankster. So he's kind of one of those people who, and you see him all over YouTube, will, you know, video himself doing these pranks.
Yeah.
And puts them up. Well, he apparently filmed himself with him and his wife out on the balcony of their home, and took his toddler son and pretended to throw the kid over the balcony. In which you can hear the wife screaming, "I fucking hate you. Why would you do that?"
Yeah.
And he says, "It's just for fun. Are you that mad?" And she's like, "Yeah, I'm that fucking mad. You don't pretend to throw our kids off a fucking balcony." When I was younger, I would be on his side. I'm older now, and it's like, okay, killing your children, probably not the funniest thing.
I'm on his side.
Yeah, I know.
Because nobody's getting hurt. And to be able to, in a, let's just say you go the distance in a 50, 60 year span of a marriage, have one fleeting, gleaming moment of all the misery that you'll endure from her to make her literally shit herself right in front of you.
Yeah.
You take it. I mean, think of the trouble he went through getting a credible looking rubber infant. I mean, they're expensive. I mean, we have one here. We've done a few baby bits here. You know.
Oh, have you? That sounds filthy.
No, yeah, we had Sarah one day walking down the street and drop it. Nice. You know, like in front of like lady shoppers and stuff. It was good times. And just pick it up like it's, you know, like she dropped her lollipop that she's still going to eat on the.
Mm.
we've really done some tasteless things, but but the truth of the matter is nobody's getting hurt, and you know it's like if she knows this guy's one of the world's best practical jokers, I would have to think she'd be in the eye rolling phase at this juncture. I know I would be. If I just had somebody that was continuously practical joking and I see a kid go over the balcony, I'd just be like, come on. You can't do better than that. No, that was.
See, I remember years ago being at a Michigan State football game, and, you know, they were passing people up the crowd, you know, that was usually chicks, of course. And from a distance, I saw someone going up, 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 and when they got to the top, they just flung them over the edge of the stadium. And that's when I realized you could hear an audible gasp of people going, oh, and then realizing, okay, it was a dummy they were passing up.
That's awesome.
But from a distance, it was like, they just toss that person over. And then there was, you know, applause afterwards. But you could hear that.
Yeah, it's you remember cap guns? You know, that had the little rolls of caps in them and you could shoot them. And they had made, like, smoke, a little bit of smoke when the cap went off.
Right.
But it just made, like, a little popping sound. Well, one day we were outside of the schoolroom. This is about fifth or sixth grade, and I had this James Bond looking gun, you know, that was looks like guns do now, but at the time, most guns looked like cowboy type guns.
Right.
This thing was kind of high end looking, but it was just a cap gun, and my friend and I got in front of the schoolroom that had all the kids in it, and I pointed it at him and fired the cap. It made a little noise. The smoke comes out of the hammer. And my friend just drops to the ground perfectly in unison with this. And I look into the room and my eyes get real wide and I drop the gun and I run off.
Which these days would have you completely expelled from school forever.
Those days it almost got me completely expelled from school forever. But I got away with about six paddlings. And to this day, when I think about it, I just laugh. You know, because the world wasn't like it is now. You know,
right.
it was preposterous. Everybody, the kids in the class knew it was ridiculous. You know, but the teacher was freaked out.
The idea of even bringing a pretend gun to school,
yeah, whichever,
is just horrifying.
Which you could do,
right?
Yeah, you know, no. Kids brought all kinds of things to school. You know, snakes.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just whatever the fuck you wanted to bring to school, you could. I knew kids that had, you know, pocket knives that were like 6 inches long. Nobody thought anything of it. Nobody thought anybody was going to get stabbed, and they didn't.
Oh, those butterfly knifey things, you know, that you go with. Yeah.
Yeah, those things.
Lots of those.
All that fucking shit you could bring, and nobody gave a shit. All stuff that would be confiscated now, and you'd be put into psych evaluation and everything else. And you know, it's still a fun moment for me, but if I did that today, you're right. I'd be considered a risk.
You would probably be shot, honestly. Yeah. That's the school officer would show up out of nowhere or some teacher come running out of a room and just blast you because they thought it was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, you can't even buy those caps anymore. You just don't see them anywhere. You used to be able to buy them at any toy store. They're non-existent now. You can't get them. Yeah, you know, it's just absolutely changed, but the timing of it was so perfect. I mean, it was, you know, his fall and the timing of the gun going off and the whole thing was just so perfect, and I just like looked in the thing and ran because I realized everybody was looking at us, so I sold it pretty good. And ran around the corner laughing, and you know, she ran outside the door and he heard the door open and he got up and started trying to run away and she grabbed him and then he sold me out and that was it. Up to the principal's office we went. And what did I get in trouble for? Not having a fake gun. Not having a cap thing. I got in trouble for not being in class.
Well, good.
Yeah.
True.
Or not having any class, or I don't know. I don't remember what it was, but it was bad.
You were young.
Yeah, and the parents got called, and it was, you know, a couple days staying at home.
Speaking of toy stores, I have not been inside a Toys R Us for a very long time, but I imagine that Toys R Us is probably one of the most depressing places on earth now. Have you been inside one recently?
I haven't been inside one for a couple years.
See, it's been like decades, and I could already tell, you know, 10, 20 years ago that it was just depressing.
Yeah, I mean, they keep incorporating like Babies R Us into it, and, you know, furniture, baby furniture. It's becoming more Babies R Us than Toys R Us. You know, toys are becoming basically something they get bought at Walmart and Best Buy, and the, you know, it's video games, it's Xbox, it's, you know, Sony PS3, right, or games for that, or people want sports stuff, you know, little boys want, you know, stuff from Dick's Sporting Goods and stuff like that. It's, you know, Toys R Us is where you go to get what's left of board games.
See, I can remember as a kid going in. I mean, there was one in Saginaw, and so we didn't go in very often. But, you know, that's where all the Star Wars stuff was. You know, if you saw it on TV, Toys R Us had it. And it was just truly this wondrous wonderland where you could walk through with big eyes and hope that your mom wasn't being mean today and would get you something.
Yeah, I mean, you still go in there and see some cool things and stuff like that. I mean, if you got like a 7-year-old or below, it's still a great place to go to get them Christmas stuff and all that, but not so much after that. Unless you're having a baby, and then, you know, they have a section of the store to get playpens and strollers and, you know, car seats and shit like that. That's really the last time I spent any formidable time in there, and Samantha's 17 now, so it's, you know, a decade and some change since I've walked in one of those.
It just makes me sad. It was such a wonderful place, and it just seems like it wouldn't be now.
I don't know. Walk in one and see. You may be surprised. It may be okay.
Well, I will do that next time I'm in Saginaw.
You may be just Little Miss Doom.
I probably am.
And just, you know, telling a whole bunch of people something that's not true right now.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do it that way. It was just, I drove by it
the
other day.
That's okay. That's just me making you feel like, bad. That makes me happy.
It worked. Thanks.
Okay, good.
You know, and it just, this particular store, it's just kind of dirty and dingy. It's kind of, you know, it's like Chuck E. Cheese. Especially the Chuck E. Cheese's here. They're the ones that, like, made national news because, you know, people keep getting shot in them.
I remember that was my only parent-to-parent encounter I ever had was at Chuck E. Cheese. This woman's fat kid stayed in the tube and got everybody caught up in there. You know, that tube you crawl through and the whole ceiling and everything.
Right.
And her fat Larry Mondello-looking kid was, like, just staying up there, not letting anybody get by. And he was, like, looking down through the clear part of it and saying, nobody can get by. You know, and then I finally found out who his mom was. I said, hey, can you unclog the drain up there?
Nice.
She goes, excuse me? I said, the clog, your son. Can you tell him to move so the 19 kids behind him can get through this thing? 11 of which are probably suffering from claustrophobia right now from having to smell your kid's ass. Can you get them to move? So she's like, move, Tommy, move, crawl through there, move. And he's like just laughing like, fuck you, Mom. So I started grabbing those balls that they crawl in. Okay. And started throwing it at it, started throwing those things. And she goes, oh, my God, you're throwing balls at my kid?
It won't be the last time, ma'am.
Yeah, exactly. I went, please don't set me up like that.
He's going to take a bunch on
the chin. So I had to go to a Chuck E. Cheese employee who had to crawl up through the other side and pull this drain clog out of there. And from that point on, it's like, I hate this fucking place. I'm never coming back here. Plus, I was bathing in that alcohol gel. You know, it was just felt like there were so many fucking microorganisms that could kill me in there.
Was it Purex, Purell, something like that?
Yeah, whatever the fuck it is, I was like in the men's room just throwing gobs of it on my arms and hands and face. And so is Sandy, so, you know, and it's like she's putting it all over Samantha. Samantha looked like she was ready for a prize fight.
But it did allow her to get down the slide easily. So,
no,
you know.
No, because it dried up. It was alcohol. Oh. But, yeah, so all those experiences with Samantha when she was a kid, you know, usually weren't good ones.
That is probably why my brother and I had so few birthday, like, adventures.
I
understand my parents better now. It's like, oh, God, we're not taking them and a group of kids there.
Yeah, we went to a bowling alley once. And I had one of the kids who was not getting enough attention. It was Samantha's birthday and another girl's birthday. And the little sister of the other girl was so upset that her sister was getting birthday attention that she decided to go out in the middle of one of the four lanes we had and just lay there.
Okay, see, I can remember as an actual child, and I'd get invited to parties and birthday stuff like that. I can remember realizing, okay, there is going to be someone that's going to have a shit fit today.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a friend from school who I would never have guessed would be the spoiled one.
Yeah.
Because they seem to deal pretty well at school and have never done. And then,
that was the case with this kid. I was like blown away. She was like, you know, the sister who was having the birthday was the problem in my eyes. I mean, I really didn't like that kid. And this one was always the nice, polite one, but she decided to show her ass and goes out and in a pair of in a dress and a pair of white tights, lay spread eagle on the on the bowling alley. You know. I said, well, the good news is, you know, nobody's ball's going into the gutter if she lays like that.
Nice. And how old was she, Lex?
Like 8. And
nice.
And Sandy goes, no, the problem is it will go in the gutter.
Nice. Because if you can't rip on other people's kids, yeah, who can you rip on?
So I go over to the mom and I say, hey, you know, will you get your kid out of the middle of the bowling alley? Because she really shouldn't be there. And she goes, oh, she's fine. She'll get over it. And I went, no, it's not her getting over it. I'm not over it. I want her out of the fucking alley. Seriously. Yeah, how can you let your kid lay in the middle of the fucking alley? Are you out of your mind?
Can I ask you a question? You are a parent. I am not. I know how my mom and dad raised my brother and I. There was a lot of fear, but love. And we never did anything like that.
No.
We were little shits at home. We were terrible, awful kids at home. But we knew how to act. That is one thing my mom can be very proud of. We knew how to act in public. So as a parent, did you ever have, I guess, issues? And I don't want to make, you know, Sam sound terrible or anything.
No,
but
Sam, you know, Sam got the same treatment my sister got and Sandy got and whatever the case was that when we go like to a restaurant or something, you know, I remember my dad sitting us in the chair and the first time I even moved, like my leg off the chair or whatever, I remember him calmly, you know, coming down to my level and saying, don't get out of the fucking chair. We're at a restaurant. It's not a playground. We're here to eat and you sit in your chair to eat. So don't get out of your fucking chair. I went, yes, sir. And obviously my sister was older than me, so she had already had that discussion a few years earlier. And I looked over at her. She looked over at me like, yeah, don't. And that was that. I never got out of my chair at a restaurant. Now, I went to a Dave and Buster's with a friend of mine and his kids, and we're sitting in a booth, and his two daughters turn around. I guess everybody's about 7 or 8 at this point. And his two daughters turn around and start messing with the hair of the guy sitting in the booth behind us.
See, I would kill them.
And I went, hey, sit down. And their dad goes, don't scream at my kids. I said, if you don't tell your fucking kids to sit down, Sam and I are out of here. I said, do you want fucking kids playing with your hair from the booth behind you? Would you like that?
See, as someone who has had people play with my hair at weird times, yeah, that's not cool.
Yeah.
I don't want other, you don't know what they're doing, especially if they're touching the back of your head, because you don't, and I hate that I'm put in that situation. Do I turn around and glare? Do I just sit there and pretend I don't notice? And are they smearing jam in the back of my head? Yeah. You know, it's like, oh.
I said, this guy is being polite and he's not saying anything. You know, he goes, he's fine with it. You know, he turned around and smiled and all that. And I said, he's not fine with it. He's a polite person. He doesn't want to be confrontational. But believe me, if I were him, and you're lucky I'm not, I would tell your kids to get the fuck away from me. Seriously. And I said, dude, nobody likes that.
No.
He goes,
it's a violation of your yeah. space. You're in a restaurant. You don't expect, unless you know it's a titty bar, you're not expecting anyone to touch you.
And he goes, well, I guess we're done here today. And I said, okay, that's fine.
We weren't allowed to even, like, you know, sit up and, like, turn around in our seats, you know. I mean, we sat right there. You didn't get up on your knees, you know. It was just...
Yeah, I mean, it was Nazi City. I ordered what was brought to, or, you know, I ate what was brought to me. I didn't get to order till I was like 13 years old. You know, it was like,
right.
You know,
like, they like chicken tenders. That's chicken tenders. Or hot dog.
Pretty much it. You know, we're gonna have steak and this and that, and they'll have burgers. But I don't want a burger. You'll have burgers. Oh, okay. Burger sounds good, Dad. Thanks. Can I have French?
I know when you officially outgrew the kids' menu and they bring you, you know, the first time the wait staff brought you like a grown-up menu, it's like, oh, I can order on my own now.
But he also tried to like culture me at times by ordering like escargot and shit like that and making you eat it.
I'm like, hey, they didn't have that at Big Boy.
I'm like, boy, this tastes pretty good. What is this, Dad? Snails. It's like, shut up. No, it's snails. It really is. But it's delicious. Try it. And sure enough, I did, and I loved it. I said, are snails a bug? He goes, I don't know. But with garlic and wine on them, they taste fucking great. Just eat them. It's an expensive restaurant. They're not going to sell you something shitty. Just eat it. Oh, okay. He was good. He was good, man. He was like great at teaching you the finer things in life, but at the same time, it was like very boarding school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I appreciate him for it. I really do. Because it was just his way of being no nonsense. That's what he was. He was an accountant. He was just not a nonsense type of guy. That basically was my mother. Who was a great balance for him, you know, and, you know, luckily I ended up with her sense of humor.
See, my mom and dad were both school teachers. And so after school, my brother and I would meet at the teacher's lounge where they taught, because they both taught together. And you can ask my brother, you can call him right now and ask him, we could tell by peeking in the door of the teacher's lounge and looking at my dad's face, what kind of night it was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it is what it is. Now, they didn't beat us or anything like that. They certainly had the wooden spoon. I know that moment when I realized, probably in my, I don't know, I'm guessing early teens. I really don't remember. But I remember the moment when I know my dad hesitated because I know he didn't want to spank me with the spoon.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized it's because I'm a girl.
Right.
And I used that to full advantage. But my brother, and he also, you know, was just a shittier kid, but he got the spoon a lot more. In fact, the spoon got broken on his ass. But, you know, that was the extent.
Yeah.
But we had fear, you know. I mean, and I'm going to say it was a healthy fear. I do think you should fear your parents. My parents weren't my friends. My mom is my friend now as a grown up. She's certainly not taking the spoon to me now, no. But, you know, they were not my friends, and I feared them, and I feared that if I misbehaved, that I knew what was going to happen, whether it's because I never leave my bedroom again for my entire 10th grade year, yeah. Or if, you know, it just is what it is. They leveraged everything over me, and it worked.
No, I had to have that talk with my daughter yesterday, you know, who I have to walk a fine line with after a nasty divorce and everything. You know, I don't want to be stern and overly, you know, strict with her and everything. But I had to have that talk with her. It's like, listen, I'm not your best friend. I'm your dad. There's a huge fucking difference. And anytime you try to treat me like the earlier, it's not going to go well for you.
Right.
So there you have it. So anyway, good talk, Stacy.
Yeah, look at us go.
Another threesome podcast wrapped up here. We absolutely enjoy doing this for you folks. Some of the subject matter on this thing goes all over the fucking place. Sorry about that, but that's just what the threesome podcast is.
Yes.
This basically is a one-hour version of the 3-hour phone calls that Stacy and I used to have every 6 months for the last 15 years or so.
Yes.
So, you know, we just don't get it in all at once, but
we would bank it. At least I would. It would be like, oh, I need to remember this when I talk to Lex next.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they would be like 3-hour conversations and nothing got repeated. And it still wasn't enough time. So thank God for this now that we don't have to remember things in 6-month increments and we can just do this. Excuse me, every single week or so. So that's it. I hope you enjoyed the threesome podcast. We'll be back with number 20 next time. How about that, Stace?
Woohoo! Look at us go.
The big 2-0.
And don't forget threesomepodcast.com. It's where you can find iTunes links, biographies if you give a shit, just basically anything you need to know about the podcast or even a lot of the LT2 channel.
She's amazing. Thank you for doing that. I have to tell everybody myself. You handled all that, yeah, for the most part. You know, because I'm a very busy man. Not really.
Yes, you are. I'm not. Yeah. Which I still need. I'm going to publicly shame you. I still need like a logo for a Gunner and Chow.
Oh, okay. Well, you can publicly shame them because I've asked for it. So okay. I will go ahead.
Damn
and
you.
I will get on that and make sure Gunner and Chow come through. They, of course, are one of our shows, along with both of Terry's shows, D's Under the Shade Tree. Ian Gleason Show, Sarah B. Show. It's on LT2. Enjoy, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.